Aida, we want to get going. It's getting a little late. I'm Jassy Eisenberg, and my husband Jerry is over there in the Mamad. We thank Rabbi Kahn for graciously giving the shiur here. We want to dedicate it in memory of my mother, Ala Shalom, Sarah Bat Yaakov Dover Vehenya, who passed away about 14 months ago. And he always encouraged us to do what was in our hearts, even if it wasn't what she really wanted it for us, which is why two out of three of her children are here in Israel, not me. But I have Karka, I have this Deka, Baruch Hashem, we have this apartment. But she always was encouraged us, and for that, my brother, sister, and I are very grateful. She was an example to us of Eshes Chayil to us, our children, our grandchildren, her great grandchildren, and.
Okay, so I want to thank the Eisenbergs for hosting us today. Most of you know for the last, I don't know how many years, I've done this in Matan, other than the years that Matan has decided to do Shiputzim. So that means that this year they are indeed doing Shiputzim. So the topic itself may seem at first glance to be a little bit strange, especially those who saw the title. The title was Shabbat and Mishkan. So I want to start with a verse in Yirmiyahu, which the Gemara is going to quote, and the Gemara is going to think is quite important. V'imlo tishmu'u elai l'kadesh et yom ha-shabbat, ulevilti sa'et masa, uvo b'sharei Yerushalayim b'yom ha-shabbat, v'itzati esh b'sha'areha, ve'echlo armanot Yerushalayim, v'lo tichbe. So what the verses describe over here, and again I want to be a little bit fair, because when we look for reasons that the Churban took place, there are many, many reasons over, let's put it this way. Thank you. We can look on the one hand in the, we can look in the Tochacha, which warns us what's going to happen and how we will end our stay in Israel. We can look at the various verses in all types of Nevi'im that talk about what is it that's going to happen, which is going to cause the Churban to take place. We can look at various Midrashim, and we can look at various Gemarot, and at the end of the day, there's almost unlimited amount. I would say almost unlimited amount, which means that somebody can almost say, okay, what do I want to talk about on Tisha B'Av, and then find that somehow is connected to the Churban. So you can have what you would call false positives in terms of, oh, this is the reason. So I want to be careful over here about the way the Gemara is going to quote this verse. Source number two, Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Berei Derav Shmuel Mishmei Derav. Ein Adleikam Mitzuya Elo B'Makom Sheish Chilul Shabbat. And this is one of these Gemarot that I think could end up disturbing some people. Oh, this happened because of this. So this is not creating an absolute correlation. This is not saying that any place that there's a fire, oh, that happened because of Chilul Shabbat. It's, I think, well known, maybe not, maybe after I say it'll be well known, that Reb Chaim Volozhin could not understand why Ashkenazim do not do Birkat Kohanim every single day in Chutz La'aretz. It didn't make any sense. So he made a decision. He was going to reinstitute Birkat Kohanim, and the next day there was a fire in Volozhin. So he ascribed the reason or the fire was because of this. And if I'm not mistaken, there was a second time he wanted to do it, and the second time there was a fire. So I can now say that a fire is caused by Birkat Kohanim? Listen, sometimes either God sends signs or sometimes we see signs. But over here, it's saying that Chilul Shabbat causes fire. And this is particularly connected to the Gemara and Shabbat locally over here. And it brings a Pasuk Shenemar, V'imlo tishmu'u elai l'kadesh et yom ha-shabbat l'vulti sa'et masa. And it's actually interesting because the thing specifically which is associated with the Chilul Shabbat is what Rabbeinu Tam called the Melechet Gerua, carrying on Shabbat. I think for a lot of people, carrying was not necessarily the most creative action and something which has the greatest amount of feeling, oh, that's really breaking Shabbat. I mean, quite the opposite. I think there are many, many people who see themselves as Shabbat observers, who nonetheless may actually have something in their pocket on Shabbat. When I was in Rav Soloveitchik's shir, and we learned about carrying on Shabbat, that was the whole beginning, and he said that when he saw this Rabbeinu Tam, that they considered that carrying was to be a minimal breaking of Shabbat, he said, oh, he said that when he got to Warsaw, he was born in a smaller town, and they moved a little bit. When he got to Warsaw, there were the trade unions. The trade unions did not want to allow the drivers to be in the same union, because you're not creative, you don't do any creative work. He says, oh, that's Rabbeinu Tam, it's not creative work. So a lot of people won't look at carrying as being so significant, but over here, it's interesting that the Pasuk says. It says again, V'im lo tishmo elai l'kadesh et yom ha-Shabbat. So the starting point is make Shabbat holy. L'vilti se'et masa. And how do you make it holy? By not carrying. Uvo b'shari Yerushalayim, and here Jerusalem is mentioned, b'yom ha-Shabbat, v'itzatzti esh b'sha'arecha. And then that's going to cause the fire to go in its gates. V'ochla armanot Yerushalayim, v'lo tichbe. They won't be extinguished. So the Gemara continues, and it says, "Amrav Nachman or Yitzchak b'shosha in b'nei odim etzim lekabalta." No one's going to be around to put it out. Amabaye, lo charva Yerushalayim. The only reason, and I do want to again warn that whenever Chazal say the only reason, they don't mean the only reason. I know that you're going to say, but it sounds like the only reason. It doesn't mean the only reason. It means the reason, one of the reasons. Lo charva Yerushalayim elu b'shvil chilu Shabbat, chilu ba et Shabbat. That means destruction of Jerusalem is because of Shabbat. So now, if I were to pause for a second and say, okay, let's try to make sense of this, let's try to process this. So I would say, Shabbat is something which is holy, and Jerusalem is something which is holy, and therefore, if we desecrate one thing which is holy, then we lose the right to the other thing which is holy. And I would, as I said, essentially put it like that. However, the thing which troubles me in this source is the verse, is it wasn't talking about a major destruction, which, let's look at the Rambam in source number 3. HaShabbat v'odvat kochavim u'mazalot, kol achat mishteim shkula k'neged shar kol mitzvot ha-Torah. Here the Rambam says that there are two things which are equal to all the other mitzvot. Now, when I say that idolatry is one of them, in a certain sense that idolatry together, Gilei Areot, Shfichat Damim, Avodah Zarah, these are the three which perhaps even caused the Chorban. Also, some of the things described to cause the Chorban. But over here, of those three, the one which is singled out is Avodat Kochavim. And here the Rambam says that this and Shmirat Shabbat, although over here he just says HaShabbat. He didn't say what about Shabbat. HaShabbat. And you'll see why I stress that in a moment. Are equal to all the other mitzvot. The Shabbat hi ha'ot shebein HaKadosh Baruch Hu uveinenu olam. And that is the sign between God and us forever, although it doesn't tell us what the sign means or what the meaning of the sign is. The fichach kol ha'over ashar mitzvot harei u'bachal rishei Yisrael. Somebody, I'll use the word habitual all the time. They break mitzvot. They're considered wicked. Aba machal Shabbat b'farhesia. Somebody who publicly breaks Shabbat Arehu ka'ovid avodat kochavim u'mazalot is considered to be like an idolater. Ushneim ka'ovdi kochavim u'mazalot l'kol divrayim, and they're considered to be like an idolater for all reasons. So let's pause for a second before we bring the verse that he says, and let's note what he says and what he doesn't say. Years ago, we had a neighbor who said that he had learned maybe with the Chazon Ish. I remember he was a complete, and he prided himself in being an apikoros. He says, a complete apikoros. He married a woman from a secular kibbutz who had never experienced Pesach, a Seder in her life. Till in her, like almost in her, like in the late 60s, something happened. They went to a Seder one year. And he told me, he grew up in a neighborhood where Ari Levine was, and he told me that once he saw Ari Levine on Shabbat, and he had smoking a cigarette, so he hid the cigarette behind him. So he said, why? Because Ari Levine, he was embarrassed. He'd known him from Yeshiva. He was the Mashkiach in Eitz Chaim. So he hid the cigarette. So I said, you hid the cigarette from Ari Levine? He said, yeah. He goes, so I said, then you're not a Machal Shabbos Verhesia. What are you talking about? I said, it's a Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah, if you go looking for it, you won't find it. It's not in Hilchos Shabbos. It's in Hilchos Erevin. And there he says, is that who can you include in an Erev? In Erev, there's certain people you can't include. So one of the people is Mechal Shabbos Ferhesi. What he says, that's only somebody who would be Mechal Shabbos in front of anybody and everybody. I said, you were embarrassed in front of Ari Levine, so you're not a Mechal Shabbos. You're not as bad as you think you are. You're not so bad. Truth is, there were a number of things that he kept Shabbat. But again, every time he did it, he felt he did it out of respect for Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, not for God, but nonetheless, I told him, that's it. He's not as bad as he thinks he is. But that's very important, because I think there are all kinds of people, if you'd follow their criteria, who may break Shabbat every single week, but there's certain people they wouldn't do it in front of. There's certain people they'd be embarrassed of. And those people, we're very, very quick to draw lines and say, yeah, you are, you aren't. You know, it's yes, no, right? Achad Ephes, right? 1-0. And that's not always the case. So even the status of being a Mechal Shabbos Ferhesi is not so simple. And therefore, again, he didn't say somebody breaks Shabbat secretly. He goes, somebody breaks Shabbat for Ferhesia is like an idolater. So this would be an issue today as well. Again, just as it is an important side point that there are a lot of restaurants that have very good hashkachot, so the waiter or the waitress will come over with a closed bottle of wine and not open it because they perhaps were told by mashgiach that they can't. So there's a lot of room for leniency in such cases, because many of those people are not mechalalei Shabbat in every sense of the term, and wherever we can defend Am Yisrael, we should. But nonetheless, the Rambam writes that both of these things, breaking Shabbat and idolatry, are equal. So therefore, if I would have started to say, well, you know why the first Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Because the Jews were idolaters, you all would have accepted it. If I would have said, well, you know, because of Jerusalem, at least, is destroyed because of Chilul Shabbat, you'll say, well, not so quick. Although we have to be careful, because the Chilul Shabbat was a very minor one. I don't mean to say this is more important than the other, but what the Rambam is about to say is going to be more surprising, and that's why I'm stressing it. He says, "Lefichach mishabeach an aviva omer ashri enashe aseh zot uben adam yachzik ba shomer shabbat michalalo v'kol shomer et shabbat kehilchata u'mechabda u'me'anga kefi kocho mufurash v'kabalas charobol o'mazeh yeter al haschar hatzafun l'olam haba." So the Rambam just now shifted gears, and what is he now talking about? He's talking about oneg Shabbat. The person who honors the Shabbat, kavod and oneg, that's the person whose reward is so great. He says it's even greater than the reward in the share of the world to come, which is like, it's very interesting. You know, we have certain neighbors in the Middle East who feel that if they do certain acts, they become a shahid and they get all kinds of rewards in the world to come. And over here, we're saying that the world to come is sort of going to be like the Shabbat that we have over here in this world. And again, it's a fascinating statement of the Rambam. And then he quotes a verse for this: Shenemar az titanag al Hashem. So let's just go down to number 4, where the whole verse is found. Im tashiv mi Shabbat raglecha asot chafetzecha biyom kodshi v'karate l'Shabbat oneg. So over here, the stress over here is, if you don't do your normal things, you don't do your stuff, that doesn't really define it, and you call Shabbat oneg. So how in the world do we get to oneg Shabbat? L'kadosh Hashem. You don't do the regular mundane, the day-to-day, but rather you sanctify the Shabbat by calling Shabbat Oneg. Az titaneg al Hashem. So, what exactly took place over here, and why of all things, okay, carrying I can understand, but how did we just now get to this issue that the significance of Shabbat is actually the Oneg Shabbat? And as I said, I think that this is really quite surprising. Now, let's pause for a second. There are those in history who've done what they could to make the concept of Mechalel Shabbat as broad as possible. One of those may very well have been of Yeshayahu, right over here in the same section, where he speaks about closing your stores on Shabbat. Concept that we have of muksa comes from here, which means there's a lot of things that we don't do on Shabbat, and we don't do them, how shall I say this, we don't do them because they will ruin the spirit of the day. And the spirit, the word spirit, is what's so important here. And therefore, essentially what the Drabbanans, and I'm saying the earliest stage of Drabbanans, do is they try to create a law which will match the spirit. And that's essentially where the laws of muksa comes from. But take the other example of keeping your stores open. Theoretically, a person can keep their store open and not break one Torah law. Money is muksa. Making a kinyan is muksa, is a drabbanan because you may come to write something, right? Where okay, they take some, you take their money. What's the problem? Or if you even want, you memorize their credit card number. Or I don't know, if you make an impression of the credit card. What I'm saying is that even going back, they take and they give you money. So what happened over here? What how was show, that was not one of the 39 malachot. Nonetheless, the Chatam Sofer said, if somebody keeps their store open on Shabbat, they're considered to be a machalal Shabbat b'farhesya, to be like an idolater in every way. Why? Because he lived at a time that breaking Shabbat became more and more public. One of the most interesting people in the last couple of hundred years, who I think his life still is not necessarily understood correctly, and it deserves a proper biography. It's somebody who had such an impact on the world that it is today. And if I would have, and if I'll give you 10 rabbis to pick, he's not the one who you necessarily would have picked, and that's Rabbi Yisroel Salanter. Rabbi Yisroel Salanter had, he was the opposite of what I think most Rosh Yeshiva do today. He had a number of students, and he said, great, now go and open up your yeshiva, and I'll take over my yeshiva, this, and he then went on to try something else. So where did he go on to? So he was watching the Jews in Europe, in Eastern Europe, going on a downhill direction. And he left the Musar movement as a way of combating with it. And then he traveled to Western Europe, and he said that, you know, when a horse is running down a mountain, pulling a wagon as quickly as possible, if you try to grab the horse or grab the wagon, you're going to end up getting dragged down with it. So he says, I may as well go. And he went to Germany, and he went to France, and he went to places that were complete assimilation and complete non-practice of Judaism. And he said, okay, now I have to try to do something over here. And he worked with college kids, college campuses. I'm saying before anybody else ever did any of these things, before anybody ever thought about things like outreach, Rabbi Yisroel Salanter dedicated the last number of years of his life, and he died all by himself, and he thought he was a failure. He thought he completely failed. One of the towns that he got to, and I believe, I'm putting two and two together when I say this, and I'll stand to be corrected when somebody says, no, you're absolutely wrong. I think it was the town of Königsberg that he got to. The only way I can really check this, I have to take a look. There were three or four towns. I didn't look. One of them was on a port. And he gets to this town, and he finds out that all the people come to shul, and then they go to work. And why do they go to work? Because it's a port city, and everybody works on the port. And therefore, what am I going to do? So I want to read this over as I saw cited by Rav Amital, as written by my friend Michael Berger, who translated it. And he's quoting Rav Dov Katz, who wrote a book about the Musar movement. This is on volume 1, page 184, so wants to look it up. Then Rav Yisroel Salanter arrived in the port to a port city in Germany, doesn't say which one. He discovered that those Jewish merchants who had business at the port would load and unload their goods on Shabbat as any other day. When Rav Salanter arrived in the synagogue where those merchants trade, he asked if he can give a sermon about Shabbat. And this is also interesting. However, after discovering there were Lithuanian visitors present, he refrained from doing so. On the next Shabbat, after he determined that there were no such guests, he delivered an inspiring sermon on the importance of Shabbat, which was perfectly suited to the audience. He concluded the sermon by saying, while loading and unloading in the port is necessary, writing is not. And the merchants accepted his suggestion and refrained from writing on Shabbat. Because he knew at that moment he would have no success telling them to stop working on Shabbat, but at least don't write. After several Sabbaths, Salanter offered another sermon in the same synagogue and told his audience that removing one's goods at the dock is essential, but surely loading is not. And the merchants accepted his prohibition of unloading as well. And thus the Jews were solely brought to observe Shabbat properly. This is the opposite of the Chatam Sofer. And by the way, I'm not judging the two people. It could be the Chatam Sofer was absolutely correct where he lived and when he lived. And it could be that Rabbi Yisroel Salanter was absolutely correct when he lived, where he lived, and when he said it. But you easily can understand that if each of them would have acted in the opposite way in the other place, it would have been absolutely catastrophic. So it's easy to expand this idea of being the Shabbat desecrator and saying, oh, this causes all kinds of things. But it's fascinating how somebody was willing to go slowly. And when I say to you, again, the Rabbi Yisroel Salanter was the first one who really understood about outreach, I think even from that understanding, from that story, one can understand this. But the truth is, we need to go back a little bit to understand again why Chorban is connected, or at least Chorban of Shalayim is connected to the breaking of Shabbat. There are other sources. The truth is, I had so many sources, I cut it down to 4 pages. But for example, there's a source that says that one of the reasons the city is destroyed because people played ball on Shabbat. And you say, well, did they break any Torah law? And it comes to the same kind of thing. That spirit of Shabbat is very important. And let's now go and look at source number 5. Vayivorech Elokim et Yom HaShviv Vayikadesh Oto Kivo Shabbat Mikol Melachto Shebara Elokim Lasot. There's 2 things in that verse which are incredibly important. One is the first time such a concept is used, and the other is the second time this concept is used. The 2 concepts over here, not necessarily in correct order, are blessing, Vayivorech, and Vayikadesh, to sanctify. The core of sanctity is Shabbat. So what I said before in passing, and maybe it didn't resonate, was that the Jews who desecrated Shabbat caused Jerusalem, which is holy, to be destroyed. You say, again, what's the correlation? I said, well, that's holy and that's holy, but it's more than that. Shabbat is the core and the source of all holiness. All holiness which exists somehow emanates from Shabbat. Second thing over here is that Shabbat is blessed. Only 2 things are blessed at this point in the early chapters of Bereishit. The other thing is man. Vayivorech, it's in source number 6 on the bottom, Kaf Chet. Vayivorech Otam Elokim Vayomer Lahem Elokim Peru V'Umelu Et Haaretz V'Kavshu. So man is blessed and Shabbat is blessed. Shabbat is the core of holiness. And let's take a look a little bit more. If we go back in source number 5, which is Perek Bet, let's read a little bit more. Pasuk Hey, v'chol siach hasadet terem yeh ba'aretz, v'chol esef hasadet terem yitzmach, so nothing was growing. Ki lo emtir Hashem Elokim al ha'aretz v'adam ayin la'avod et adama. And man was not there yet to work the land. Man is then formed. Pasuk Zayin, v'yitzar Hashem Elokim et adam afar min adama v'yipach v'apav nishmat chayim v'yadam l'nefesh chaya. Man is formed. And then, maybe this is surprising, also one of these verses we forget, Vayita Hashem Elokim gan be'edin, Vayasam sham et Adam asher yatzar, and he placed man there, which means that man wasn't originally from Eden, and man is placed in the Garden of Eden. Vayismach el Hashem Elokim min adama, kol eitz nechmad l'mareh, v'tov l'ma'achal, v'eitz ha'chaim b'toch ha'gan, v'eitz ha'dat tov v'ra. V'yikach Hashem Elokim et Adam, v'yinecheu b'gan Eden avdol l'shamra, and a second time it said, and God takes man and places in the Garden of Eden. And over here it uses 2 words which are incredibly important. La'avda u'lashamra. La'avda, I guess, means to work, and l'shamra means to guard. That is all that we have. And then God says also 2 things which should be seen as being parallel, although I did not see anybody make this parallel, but I think it's very obvious. And if somebody did and I read it, then I guess all of our memories are going at some point. V'yitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam limar mikol etz hagan ochal tochal. Eat from every tree. U'me'etz adat tov v'ra lo tochal mimenu. So there's a lo, don't. Ki v'yom achalam mimenu mot tumat, because eating from the tree is going to cause death. V'yom Hashem Elokim lo tov v'yot adam lavado. It's not good for man to be alone. Do you notice the 2 things that are negative? Don't eat from the garden, from this tree, because it's going to bring death, and it's not good for man to be alive, to man to be alone. And actually, when man is alone, then he can't create life. Should I say that again, or that was not sufficiently clear? There are 2 things where it says no. It's not good to eat from this tree, it will cause death. It's not good for man to be by himself. Man by himself brings the opposite of what that tree does. Man by himself also doesn't bring life. So these 2 things over here, again, Shabbat has a blessing. Man has a blessing. Don't eat from the tree. It'll bring death. Man shouldn't by himself. And I'll add in, because it certainly won't bring life. And that's how we end chapter 2, which is basically idyllic. Man is in the Garden of Eden. Man is in the Garden of Eden. Lo v'da'u l'shamra. And the only thing that we don't necessarily understand is what exactly La'ovda u'lishomra means, certainly at this point in this context. So let me start by mentioning the Rashi, and those who come to my weekly share hopefully remember, because I said in the last couple of weeks, in source number 7 on that pasuk which was just cited before, ki lo amtir Hashem lokim al ha'aretz v'adam ayin la'avodat adama, because it hadn't started raining yet and there wasn't man yet to work the land. So Rashi says in 8, l'fi sha'adam ayin la'avodat adama ve'ein makir b'tovatam shel geshamim u'kishaba adam v'yada Hashem tzarech olam hitpalel aleim v'yordu. So man wasn't there la'avod. So over here, Rashi seems to be connecting la'avod with lehit palel. Eiza avodah, avodah shebelev. Man wasn't there yet to serve God. So therefore, man wasn't there la'avod. So let me start again then. The Garden of Eden is very, very different from existence today. So the Garden of Eden, again, it's idyllic. So in the Garden of Eden, what does it mean to work in the Garden of Eden? So Rashi just now gave us a hint. Because when Rashi says, because man was not there yet, there was not a man to work, and Rashi says to pray, then that therefore gives me a hint what exactly La'ovda u'lishomra means. La'ovda, man of the Garden of Eden, didn't yet work the field. And how do I know he didn't yet work the field? Because that's part of the curse afterwards. It wasn't that he was planting, he was plowing and so on, because that's all part of the curse. The Chizkuni, I think, understands this, what I just now said, and that the context, this is very important, the context of man's creation in the second chapter, if you didn't notice it or you didn't see it, it begins with Shabbat being created and sanctified, and only then is man introduced. And only then is man put in the Garden of Eden, and only then is man put l'ovda u'lishomra. But I'll say again the problem. It can't be to work the ground, because that's after the curse. On the other hand, Shabbat, man, Garden of Eden. So I hope that you're getting this connection, which now will be obvious when the Chizkuni says it. L'ovda u'lahashkota u'lishomra shlo yimsena raglei behima v'chaya shadayin lo yuhem. It's very interesting. There was nothing to protect the Garden of Eden because the Kruvim were not there with their swords. Similar to 6 days you work. So what the Chizkuni is saying is that this reminds me of something. La'ovda u'lishomra reminds me of somehow the 6 days of the week and Shabbat. But we're not understanding yet what Gan Eden was and how this is connected to Churban and how this is connected to Mikdash and so on. Well, Mikdash maybe should be making sense already, because we've already said that Shabbat is this place, is the first place where there's holiness. Mikdash, or all places of holiness, especially Mikdash, which is called Mikdash, what is the correlation going to be between that and Shabbat? So there has to be some correlation. Now, those of you who think that I'm just talking and that none of this is really grounded, we get to Parshat Vayakel. Parshat Vayakel will find that the very things where the Lamed Tet Melachot are connected to on Shabbat is Mishkan, that these things are interrelated. The things you can't do on Shabbat are the things they did to make the Mishkan. There is an interrelationship between these two. On a much deeper level, the interrelationship, I believe, is connected in the words of the Midrash, that when God says to Moshe, make a Mishkan, he says, what? How can you make a Mishkan for God who transcends all of creation? So God says, it's not what you think, rather you put 20 amot here and 8 amot there. V'ani atzamtzemet shchinati b'toch am al ama. And I'll perform something called tzimtzum, and I'll cause God's holiness to somehow permeate one little place, one little building. The reality is the same thing happens in terms of creation, in terms of Shabbat, that God, who transcends time, creates time. And Shabbat as well, and this is part of a much longer discussion, also is somehow a zeich l'maseh bereshit, a commemoration for that very same act of tzimtzum which God did when the universe is created. But let's take a look, and maybe slightly out of order, if we look at 11 at Akedat Yitzchak, He writes, Nimtza Shashabbat Hazeh Hi Mekor HaBrachot VaHakdushot Umimeni Kablu HaKdusha Kol Modei Hashem HaMakudashim. That the reality is that Shabbat is the source for all blessing and is the source for all holiness. This is where holiness is introduced. And again, just in terms of methodology, and I don't mean to really drive this point too much, in terms of methodology, there are those who believe the first time anything is introduced in the Torah is of particular significance. That's where the idea is unveiled, as it was. That's the core. That's the authentic presentation of it. Holiness is presented in terms of Shabbat. That's the core of holiness. If we go back a second in Source 10 to Rabbeinu Bachaye, he's going to say something which is probably the most important thing that we're going to see today. And I want to try to make sure we understand it. So let's look from the beginning. Rabbeinu Bachaye, also, as I said in my class a number of times, he's very self-aware. Unlike some commentaries who will throw something at you and you're not always sure if they're saying pshat or drash or something else, he'll tell you when he's saying pshat, and he'll tell you when he's saying drash, and he'll tell you when he's saying sod. And in that sense, he's a very, very good student of the Ramban. V'yesh l'chadat, ki l'shi'ur ta'anug ha'adam began. Now, he just now did something which maybe you noticed or maybe you didn't notice. When I talked about before of that Rambam, the Rambam said the thing about Shabbat, which is really so significant, which makes it similar to the world to come, what aspect was it? It was Onig Shabbat. So where does Onig come from? So he says Onig Ta'anug. Where's the source of that from? Well, the source of that is obviously, and not to you, than it is to me and to Rabbeinu Bachaye, the source for all pleasure is a garden, which was called the Garden of Pleasure, Gan Eden. So what he's saying over here is again, Yesh l'chadat ki l'shi'ur ta'anug ha'adam began atir olam sheyachzer l'tchiyat ha'mitim. Ki b'nei tchiyat ha'mitim it'angu ke'achad ha'guf ha'nefesh yu ha'rov b'tanug ha'nefesh u'an b'tanug ha'guf. So again, this was a little out of context, but it is going right there in the beginning of Bereshit, and he's saying is that that Judaism believes in a combination of the physical and the spiritual, and the future worlds will have a combination of the world to come of the physical and the spiritual, but it will be mostly spiritual. Ki Adam harishon kodem shechata. It will be like man before he sinned. Now, let me pause for a second. What did man do before he sinned? Lovda v'lishamra. But what did he do? So you already got the hint for Rabbeinu Bachaye that somehow this is connected to Shabbat. It's not just about agriculture, but it's about Shabbat. What did Adam do before the sin? And the answer is, well, he didn't do anything because he didn't spend all that much time there. But what exactly was his mandate? So I'll say, and you may think that I'm exaggerating, I'll say that his mandate was to keep Shabbat. And what does it mean to keep Shabbat? And there's going to be certain things I'm going to say now that you're going to say, well, the opposite seems to be the case. Adam's existence before the sin was an existence of Shabbat. I can't imagine what Shabbat would have been like. But why do I say his existence is an existence of Shabbat? Because there was no work. There was no toil. There was no sweat of the brow. There was no pain. All of that is post-sin. The Nitziv in Source 13, or maybe even better, we'll go to the Nitziv in Source 15. Let's look at the 13. Brit Olam. Shabbat is a covenant forever. 13. Brit Shabbat hul sheYisrael lo yitasku b'parnasa rak yitangu al Hashem min amuchan. V'neged ze Brit Shabbat shaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpia b'Shabbat brachot Shavu haba. Ulaze b'haremiz b'lechem ha'panim shunach b'Shabbat v'yabo bracha b'achilato u'misham chal bracha l'chol yoshvei Eretz Yisrael. This deserves to be read very slowly and many times. What is it that he just now said? That on Shabbat, it's a covenant. And on Shabbat, we don't work. But all the blessing that we get for the following week comes from that Shabbat. And he says a symbol of this is the Lechem HaPanim, which just stays there from week to week. And from there comes this blessing to all of Eretz Israel. Notice what he did is that he somehow moved from Shabbat to the Mishkan, which again was Shabbat to the Mikdash, which again, for us, should be something which is understandable. The Nitziv in source number 15 He talks about Shabbat as an oat. And it's also a little strange. He says, "Bemesha umot olam ro'im shison ezerim b'shabbat mimalacha v'ze'oti l'kol olam." That we're able to not do anything on that day, that is a sign for the entire world. He also uses the word vayinafash. He says the world rests. Shemaseh shemayim va'aretz benefisha. The entire world is in rest. Okay. So now we're going to try to understand this properly, and again, hopefully get to the depth and understand why all this is connected to Churban. The reason this is connected to Churban is actually very simple. Is because this is the core. This is the core of holiness. The core of holiness is where all holiness comes from. Which means I can't speak about the holiness of Yerushalayim. I can't speak about the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash unless somehow I understand Shabbat. And you can say, "But how can I say that?" I'm saying that's really what the Chumash is telling us. In a sense, everything that happens afterwards is a replacement for that idyllic existence that took place in the Garden of Eden prior to there being sin. Adam, prior to sin, is like we try to be on Shabbat. What I mean by that is, we don't work that day. You know, 6 days a week a person works. They go to the field, they cut the thing, they cut the fruit, they bring the, right? And then they have food. But on Shabbat, I know you're going to say, but we worked the week beforehand, and that's why we have money, and that's why we have food, and that's why we have things. And isn't that interesting that the Netziv says that all the food we're going to have the next week is because of what we had on Shabbat? That's what a bracha is. It wasn't that we have Shabbat today, we have food on Shabbat because we worked last week. He goes, no, you're going to have food next week because you rested on Shabbat. How can you say such a thing? He can only say such a thing because he understands that we're talking about blessing and holiness. Kedusha and bracha. And from this place is where all bracha is going to come out from. From this place, all kedusha would come from. Because if I would say to you that the Beit HaMikdash was so holy, and I'm making this up and I'm saying this theoretically, and I would say that some place says that if you went to the Beit HaMikdash, and if you did this, if you brought this korban in the Beit HaMikdash, your life would be blessed and your parnasah would be blessed for the next who knows amount of time, you would believe it. You would believe it because you know the Beit HaMikdash is really holy. And serving in the Beit HaMikdash would create a blessing in my life. So of course you go and you do something in the Beit HaMikdash, it causes blessing, future-oriented, and you don't realize that's exactly what the Netziv just now said about Shabbat. Why? Because the Shabbat is the core of Kedusha. The Shabbat is the core of holiness. You can't speak about the holiness in the Mishkan or in the Beit HaMikdash without understanding that there was a core place that all holiness existed beforehand, and that is the Shabbat. The very end of Source 18, which talks about all the punishment that takes place and all the curses that take place, and therefore, in contrast to Perek Bet and Aleph and Bet, where blessings take place, in Source 18 and Perek Gimel, Arur Atah, Arur Ha'adama, over here, curses are coming down, but at the very end, something else takes place. V'yigareish et ha'adam, Pasuk Kaf Daled, Vayashkein mikedim lagan Eden et akruvim ve'elahat acherav mitapechet lishmar et derech al etz achayim. So it's interesting. Adam's job was la'ovda u'lishomra. What is he going to have to now do? La'oveda to adama. So therefore, he didn't keep his job properly in Eden. So now he has to be oved. What happened to the shmirah that he was supposed to do? So you notice over here, the shmirah is replaced by kruvim. With this cherev metapechet, but there's another word that I bolded there. I don't know if you see it, and that's vayashkein. Vayashkein is the earliest form, which will one day become mishkan. Vayashkein mikedem lagan eden et kruvim, which means the earliest source that we have of something that will later be fully expounded and understood in the context of the mishkan or in the context of the Beit HaMikdash is the placement of the kruvim at the edge of the Garden of Eden. And again, I want to stress, later on, the Mishkan is going to be called Mishkan. Later on, we're going to say the Mishkan has to do with Shekhinah. But the very first time that this is going to be mentioned is right over here. So this Ovda L'Shomra doesn't really disappear. Either we do it properly, like Adam did in the Garden of Eden, or we're supposed to do, L'Ovda L'Shomra. And Ovda there means L'Avodat Hashem. It means to pray. It means to serve God. That's la'ovot. That's what avodah means. L'shamor would seem to be connected to the Shabbat, which is the source of holiness and the source of blessing. But if you don't do it, then you're going to have to get your source of blessing from another place. You're going to have to start working. You're going to have to start working, and that's going to be la'avod, la'avda. That's going to be the avodah which takes place now. But what happened to the shomra? So, of course, when history unfolds later on, we're going to end up being commanded with the Shabbat. In the meantime, the shomra over here is, again, this is all interrelated together. Should have bolded the lishmar. It's the Vayashkein, the Kruvim, and it's Lishmar is all together guarding that path to the Garden of Eden. Source number 19, it talks about Onig Shabbat in a way which may be surprising to some. It talks about Onah, the mitzvah. It's actually the merger together of the two concepts of holiness. It's the merger together of the husband and the wife, of there being a bracha there, and it's the merger together with the Shabbat itself, which is interesting that the Rambam puts them together over here together. This is definition of Onik Shabbat. Source number 20 is a very interesting midrash. It's a midrash Tehillim. And what this midrash essentially says, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because of timing, but what the midrash says is that Adam sins in the Garden of Eden, and the thing that saved him was Shabbat. Shabbat came and basically said to God, like, what are you doing? Now, there's a lot of depth to this, because ultimately Shabbat and Am Yisrael become a partner, as it were. But over here, it says, as Nichnasa Shabbat Pinao Misham, Vayumachei Asharet Karulo, Adam, so we'll skip a little bit, Vayom HaShabbat Naselo Sanigar, Va'amor Lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu, Rabon Olamim, B'sheshet V'masel Lo Yanash Adam Ba'olam, V'chiyata Matchil, Zehui Kedushati, V'zehui Menuchati. ובשביל השבת ניצור מדינה של גהינום. כיוון שירה אדם כוחה של שבת, בא אדם לא מהימנון לשבת, מזמר שיר ליום השבת. So background to understand this. According to the Midrash, the author of מזמר שיר ליום השבת was Adam himself. Why would Adam say this? So it says that Adam sins, and again, the calendar of that first day is interesting, but the time Adam sins, the time he gets kicked out of the... God is going to punish him, and according to this, was going to punish him on Shabbat itself. And Shabbat turns to God and says, "How can you can't do that? You're breaking Shabbat." And I want to say it again. Shabbat's the one thing which is holy. How can you break Shabbat? So it's saying, according to this Midrash, that it was Shabbat that saves Adam. Shabbat, which brings about Adam's being saved when it could have been, he shouldn't have been saved. In source number 22, the Chatam Sofer we quoted before, who heaps more scorn against the Mechalel Shabbat and says, you know what the Mechalel Shabbat does? He causes God to be Mechalel Shabbat as well. He doesn't say it in so many words, but look how he says it. Yesh lefaresh the Mechalel Shabbat matriach HaKadosh Baruch Hu ligzor gzeirot ra'ot. He causes God to have to make terrible decrees on Shabbat. Because that's how bad the Chil Shabbat is, because he makes God, which means Shabbat is something which really should be in all of the cosmos. But he says, look what the Mechalel Shabbat does. In source 24... there is a teaching of the Urayim. The Urayim is one of the early authorities. This is within the broader school of what we can call the Balei HaTosfot. And he says something which nobody else says. Maybe. Remember there's a pasuk that says something to the effect, Et shabtotai tishmaru v'miktashai tira'u. I believe that's, is that the pasuk? Where there's a direct comparison between Shabbat and Mikdash. Now, of course, there's a lot to say about that. In the Mikdash, certain laws of Shabbat are suspended. In Shvut B'Mikdash. That's interesting. But he takes it and he goes the other way around. And he says, Moreh Shabbat, there is one of the Taryag Mitzvot, as far as he's concerned, to have awe of Shabbat. Now, there is a mitzvah to have awe of the Mikdash. Certain things you can't do in the Beit HaMikdash. Kishem shetziva Kodesh Baruch letet mora v'kibud lemikdash, kach tziva letet l'shabbat sharei hukshu ze lezeh, tichtiv et shabtotai tishmor miktashai tirao. Uma mora shabbat shichshov adam bilibo lechabed et shabbat, ulishmor liyot chared al adavar v'lo min ha-shabbat atayare, elu mimishi is here al ha-shabbat. But I think most of us, if right now, we would say, and I think they allowed it in the last couple of minutes, that if we would say, come, let's go up to Har HaBayit. I would hope that anybody going up to Har HaBayit would be filled with awe and trepidation. I'm not touching the point of whether you're allowed to or not allowed to. Unless you want me to.
No, not to.
I'm not touching that point about are you allowed to or not allowed to, but I will observe that there were Rishonim who felt you're allowed to go up there, but for a simple reason, like the Ravid, because it lost all of its holiness. You can go there, but it just has no significance. There are others who felt that it has significance, and therefore it should follow that you should be allowed to go there. And according to those who say you can go up to Har HaBayit, the reason you can go up today is because the parts of the Har HaBayit you can go up to are the parts that are not necessarily the parts which are holy. So now you're in a very funny circle. You can go to the places that don't have holiness. Why? Because they don't have holiness. But why do you want to go to the place that doesn't have holiness? And there may be a great purpose to go up, even places that don't have holiness. But when one does go up, there should be a feeling of awe and trepidation. There are certain halachot that have to apply there. But what the Reim is saying is that same awe and trepidation have to do with the Shabbat. Now the first, again, there are various layers to this. The first thing is that I want to understand is where did we start today? We started with the Gemara that Abaye said is because people didn't keep Shabbat is why Jerusalem is destroyed. And you can say, what does one have to do with the other? Because here is a place, and here is an idea of holiness, and here is an idea of holiness. If you can't keep this holiness, then you forfeit that holiness. So that was essentially the correlation from the very beginning. But here it's saying is that this correlation is much stronger, and is just like the Mikdash deserves awe and trepidation, so does Shabbat. Would you imagine a halacha, or a practice, or a behavior that someone would, while standing in the Beit HaMikdash, be unable to lie? Let me put it a little differently. That standing in the Beit HaMikdash, would you imagine that you are your best self? Yes? We have a best self, don't we? Sometimes we access it and sometimes we don't access it. Maybe more often than not, we don't access it. But will you imagine that if you stood in the Beit HaMikdash, you would be your best self? So there are a number of passages in the Gemara that I can bring that show this idea. But there is a shocking passage in Source 25, and the reason I got here is because one of the commentaries, Rabbi Yisachar Tamar, has a commentary on the Yerushalmi, and he believed that this was the same teaching as the Urayim. There is a Mishnah in Demai that says, Alokech perot mimisha inu ne'eman al ma'asrot. That means there's a Jew who's not observant. They're not observant, and they don't take maser. So you can't believe them. V'shachach la'asran, and maser wasn't taken, sho'alo b'shabbat v'ochel alpiv. So what's the case? You bought maser from your makolet, from a guy who you cannot trust that he takes maser. Why? Because the guy is the kind of person who doesn't take maser. So what do you normally have to do? You go home and you take maser. You forgot to take maser. But you see the guy on Shabbat morning and say, oh yeah, by the way, the stuff I bought from you, did you take maser? Now this guy doesn't take maser and he can't be trusted. So can you trust him? So it says in the Mishnah, Ochel alpiv, sho'olo b'shabbat, you can ask him on Shabbat, you can eat it. Chashecha matzoi Shabbat lo yichal al cheyaser. But once Shabbat is over, you can't do it. Now one possibility of understanding this Mishnah is that maybe it's a suffik d'rabbanon, maybe it's suffik d'rayer, maybe suffik d'rabbanon l'kula, and on Shabbat it's necessary, you can't take maser on Shabbat, maybe you can do it. And the Yerushalmi does not give that answer. It says as follows instead. Chevraya b'shem Rabbi Yochanan means the fellows in the Beit Midrash said in the name of Yochanan. B'nei kavod Shabbat itiru. Said, no, the reason they were makel is what I just now said, is because of Kavod Shabbat. So therefore, Safik, Durabanan, Kavod Shabbat, you can eat it. Imnei Kavod Shabbat, Itiru. Imnei Kavod Shabbat, Lama Lid L'Sho'alo. If it's allowed because of a Safik, then why ask? Just eat it. It's a Safik, so use it. Va'one al yedei ila Rabbi Bibi b'shem Rabbi Chanina Emat Shabbat alav who Omer Emet, that even the guy who 6 days of the week in his makolet, he sells stuff without a hechsher, and you can't trust his kasherus, but on Shabbat he says it's kosher, you can trust him. Why? Because a Jew wouldn't lie on Shabbat. This is an unbelievable Yerushalmi. The Jew wouldn't lie on Shabbat. But what is, so first of all, as I said, so there are those who wanted to connect this to what we just saw in the Urayim. Why? Because there's a mitzvah. Just like you can fear the Mikdash, you fear Shabbat. You have awe. It's better than fear. It's awe. Just like I said, that a person standing in the Beit HaMikdash, standing in front of God, standing in front of the Kruvim, you're not going to get that close. But you're standing in the Beit HaMikdash. How can you do something dishonest in the Beit HaMikdash? How can you lie in the Beit? You can't. You have to be your best self in the Beit HaMikdash. And if you're not your best self in the Beit HaMikdash, then we can start all over again and question why we even need the Beit HaMikdash. What's it going to do for us? Because it does nothing for us. If we can't be our best selves there, so then the whole thing is meaningless. But don't you realize the parallel over here of the Yireyim? But Shabbat also, we have to be our best selves. And therefore, there were people that you couldn't trust their kashrut 6 days of the week. But when it came to Shabbat, of course, why? How is it you're not going to speak the truth on Shabbat? Don't you wish this were true? But it was true. It was true. Now that's exactly the point. It was true. And this is such an unbelievable teaching, because what it's really saying is that there is a sense within the Jewish collective soul that this is where holiness still exists. And, not my generation, but we talked about this before. My parents' generation, there were people who would lose their jobs every single Friday if they wanted to, keep Shabbat. Again, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. There's a friend of mine told me years ago the story that he had a kid, and he wanted a name after one particular person, and his wife said, "But what about maybe after this other grandparent? No one was named after him, a grandfather." And they had decided that whenever they have arguments, they would go over and they would discuss with the rabbi. So he told me there were two different rabbis they would discuss with. One was Rav Gusman, and the other was Rav Scheinberg. And this particular one, I believe they went to Rav Scheinberg. And it was right after Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky had passed away within a year or two before this. And he said, "I want to name my son after either Moshe or Yaakov, after the Gedolei Hador, so that the neshama that they have will be a neshama which will be very, very holy." And therefore, and his wife said, "But I have a grandfather that we never named for, and I think the grandfather." So Schoenberg asked, "So what kind of Jew was he?" So she starts by saying he was a Pashut. He was a Pashut Jew. He was unlearned, but he was a Shomer Shabbos. So he stopped, and because he did the math quickly in his head, and he had come from America, and he knew what America was in those days. And he said, "If your grandfather was a Shomer Shabbos in America in those days, he wasn't a Pashut Jew." We lost Shabbat at some point. We had it for many, many years. It was the only place of holiness. There's a recording you can see on YouTube of Rabbi Soloveitchik speaking about the Jews in Warsaw and how they transformed and became something else on Shabbat. He said he couldn't recognize them. Poor, quote-unquote, schleppers during the week had tattered clothing, but on Shabbat suddenly they transformed into people because they put on different clothing for Shabbat and they looked differently. I mean, in terms of Klal Yisrael, we lost Shabbat. The percentage of Jews who don't keep Shabbat is an astounding number. One of the blessings of living in Israel, and this depends if you're an optimist or a pessimist, most Jews in Israel observe Shabbat. You notice the word that I used? A couple of years ago, I was speaking to a group of students. They were from South Africa. And right away, so I asked a question because I just wanted to get a sense of what level I should be talking on. And one of them says right away, "Rabbi, we don't keep Shabbat." So I've been to South Africa a couple times. So I said, "Do you all, how many of you go to shul on Friday night?" They all go to shul Friday night. By the way, you want to hear behavior modification? Almost everyone goes Friday night. Very few people go Shabbos morning. So what do? The rabbis give their sermons on Friday night. That's behavior modification. That's when the people are there. That's when you give your sermon. So I've been to South Africa enough times to know that a lot of people go. They drive, they get there. So I say, "Do you go to shul Friday night?" "Yeah." So I said, "So you keep Shabbat?" "No, we don't keep Shabbat. We drive, we this. Shabbos morning, we do this, we don't keep." I said, "But you observe Shabbat." I said, "Let me ask you a question. Would an atheist ridicule you for going to shul on Friday night? Would you be the subject of ridicule of an atheist for going to shul, opening a book, and talking to God on Friday night?"
"Of course not."
I said, of course. I said, it's okay. So you observe Shabbat. I said, you're Shabbat observers. I'm sorry, because you want to walk around and say, no, we don't keep Shabbat. I said, you observe Shabbat. I think everybody who lives in the state of Israel observes Shabbat. Again, I'm not so naive to say, but not everyone is doing it properly. But a lot of them would not be Mechal Shabbat in front of a person, of a particular person. It could be their grandfather, it could be his cousin, it could be somebody else. In front of them, they would not be Mechal Shabbat. Okay? All of those, according to the Mishnah Berurah, cross them off, they're not considered to be a Mechal Shabbat for Hesia, which has huge implications in terms of Halacha. What percentage of Jews are saying Kiddush on Friday night? Recognizing that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh day. And it could be someone told him along the way, okay, you're allowed to put on a television, you can put on lights, you can go to a soccer game, you can do all kinds of things, but they make Kiddush on Friday night.
Do they understand why?
Yes. On Friday night, the news starts, not that I've seen it. Shabbat Shalom. According to some Rishonim, the Yotzei Kiddush with that. Shabbat Shalom, Yotzei Kiddush. Again, I'm not being overly naive. I'm really not. I'm not saying, okay, therefore everybody keeps Shabbat. There's obviously something else.
There is no word for Saturday.
There is no word for Saturday. If you want to be an ultra secularist, you can call it Saturday, because there are a lot of words in that they take from English, or you can say Yom HaShvi'i if you really want to. I understand. But nonetheless, on Friday night, Shabbat Shalom. But it's more than that. As I said, you can say that I'm naive. There is one more thing that I wanted to get to, which I skipped here along the way. And in Source 16, the Gemara in Beitza says something a little bit... Well, this is the source of the Neshama Yitera. It says, Damar of Shimon ben Lakish, Neshama Yitera notena Kadosh Baruch Hu badam be'erev Shabbat. Ulmotzai Shabbat notlan oto himenu. Shenema Shabbat v'yinafash. Rashi writes, what is a neshama yetera? Rochav lev l'mnucha v'l'simcha. That we're given more spiritual substance so that we can enjoy rest and happiness. L'ur patuach l'ravacha. V'yolcha v'yishte v'ein nafsho katza alav. And eat and drink and your soul will not be upset with you. It's fascinating. Why do you get a neshama yetera? Because we eat more in Shabbat. So you eat more in Shabbat. I know people say that you eat, you don't gain weight in Shabbat. No, it's not that you don't gain weight. It's that your soul's not disgusted. It's that you're given more soul. You're given more...
First sip of water.
You're given more soul. You're given more soul on Shabbat. So what does this mean that you're given more soul on Shabbat? The way the Zohar phrases this, and this you don't have in front of you, is that you're given a new soul every Shabbat. And it's the same new soul in a sense that Adam was given in the Garden of Eden. That's the core of all holiness. That in order to be able to take in holiness, you need something new other than that what you've had in this mundane world. The core of holiness in this world is Shabbat. When man rejects Shabbat, Yerushalayim gets destroyed. Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash and Shabbat have a fascinating interrelationship. The original blessings in this world were man blessed in terms of Pru Avu, and on the other hand, we find that the Shabbat was blessed. It's interesting that Yom Kippur, which is the greatest day of the year in terms of the Beit HaMikdash, any of us who say, no, I don't miss the Beit HaMikdash so much in my life. Yeah, say that on Yom Kippur. To be able to start the day with sin, and by the end of the day, be completely cleansed. It's interesting that the Kohen Gadol needs to be someone who's married. Right? There are halachic reasons, but I think that there are deeper reasons as well. I mean, this is where blessing comes from. The Kruvim were understood to be male and female, representing Adam and Eve before the sin. Which means that the Beit HaMikdash, Yom Kippur, holiness, all comes back to this core, which takes place beforehand. But part of that core of the 6 days of creation is the seventh day, and therefore Shabbat. We get a new soul on Shabbat. We get a neshama yetera on Shabbat. We have a capacity to deal with holiness on Shabbat. The blessing of not working on Shabbat and foods appearing, and I know you're going to tell me that whoever works an Erev Shabbat has food on Shabbat, which, by the way, the Gemara, when it says that, was not talking about Shabbat. I know you're going to say, how can that possibly be not Shabbat? But it says it about Shabbat. No, it wasn't talking about Shabbat. There where it says it was talking about Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. That if you don't work in Olam Hazeh, you're not going to have Olam Haba. But the point of what I'm saying is that the core of all holiness goes back to those 6 days of creation. The core of that holiness is Shabbat. In our lives today, when we miss Yerushalayim, ah, but we have Yerushalayim, we miss the Beit HaMikdash, and that we don't have. There is one place, there's one island that we're able to experience Kedusha, and that's the Shabbat. And that Kedusha that we can experience is like Adam HaRishon before the sin. Miraculously, everything is there, everything is taken care of. The problem is that we can desecrate it. And that's why even the Rambam, and I'm going to get in trouble for accusing the rationalist of a deep Kabbalistic idea, but he was basing himself on the Pesukim in Yeshayahu, and I'm going to say it again, it goes back to the Garden of Eden. It's not just the person who desecrates Shabbat because he did Harisha and Ktsira and so on, that he did all the 39 Melachot. It's even the individual that didn't have owning Shabbat properly. But you're going to say, it's especially the Onig Shabbat. Because the Onig Shabbat was a way that we can experience what the Garden of Eden is like, which means we can experience what the real Kedusha was like before, the original place of Kedusha, of Makom Kedusha. And this whole idea of a Mishkan coming afterwards is only when the Olavda and the Shamra wasn't kept, and this place is destroyed, and now we need a new place which is going to represent that holiness. And now, and therefore, what is Shabbat? Shabbat is Me'in Olam Haba. I want to end with Zmirot for Shabbat in Source 26. Hine Yom Geula, Yom Shabbat Im Tishmaru. Shabbat is understood as a day of redemption. Vayitam Li Skula, Linu Vachar Tavaru. You want to be able to bring God in your life and bring holiness in your life, so that can only be accessed today. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash. Can only be accessed through Shabbat. Va'az tichyu lefanai, v'timlu tzifunai, Shabbat hayom la'Hashem. Chazek kiryati. What is kiryati? It's my holy city. Jerusalem is destroyed because they didn't keep Shabbat. Chazek kiryati elokim elyon. V'hashev et nivati. And rebuild the city. Rebuild Jerusalem. B'simcha v'higayon. And what happens when it gets rebuilt? Yisharu sham renanai leviyai v'chohanai v'az titanag el Hashem. Shabbat hu hayom l'Hashem. Which means when Chazal tell us that if all the Jews were to keep just one or perhaps two Shabbatot, Mashiach will come, I hope you understand that idea a little bit more. But it's not just the result of keeping these Shabbatot is what brings Mashiach. The experience of properly keeping the Shabbat is the closest that we can get to Gan Eden on one hand and the Yemota Mashiach on the other hand, because a Jew who really can experience Shabbat, not just by not doing Malacha, but by sanctifying it properly, that person can feel what the world was like before there ever was any type of sin. Bezrat Hashem, we'll get to the point that all of Am Yisrael, and I'll start in Eretz Yisrael, not only recognize that there is a Shabbat Shalom, and there's a day that we don't work, that the holiness in Shabbat will become more and more manifest, and people will keep it not because they're forced by politicians, but because they're forced because they're running after meaning, and they're looking for something which is meaningful, and they somehow see that there's a connection over here, and somehow get to this intuition, wow, there's a day I don't have to work, and I can take pleasure in, and there's holiness, and I can experience something which is incredibly holy. And if we're able to get to that experience, then indeed, Jerusalem is rebuilt, and the Beit HaMikdash could be rebuilt. B'mehera bi'ameinu.